I'm going to show another short video that is actually tied to the sermon. And some of you may have seen it already because it is the most viewed video right now that's out here. And there's a message in it that, again, ties directly in with the sermon I'll give. So what I want you to do as we go through this is watch the expressions, people's reactions, and we'll play not the entire video of this, but we'll go to a certain point, then it'll stop, and then we'll come back.
Hi, what's your name, darling?
My name is Susan Boyle.
Okay, Susan, where are you from?
I am from Blackburn, near Bathgate, West Lothian.
It's a big town.
It's a sort of collection of... It's a collection of... villages. That's a thing there.
And how old are you, Susan?
I am 47. And that's just one side of me.
Okay, what's the dream?
I'm trying to be a professional singer.
And why hasn't it worked out so far, Susan?
I've never been given the chance before, but here's hoping it'll change.
Okay, and who would you like to be as successful as?
Elaine Page.
Elaine Page.
Like,
what are you going to sing tonight?
I'm going to sing I Dreamed a Dream from the Miserables.
Okay. Big song.
Yeah? Yes.
I dreamed a dream in time gone by.
Susan Pears.
Without a doubt, that was the biggest surprise I have had in 3 years on this show. When you stood there with that cheeky grin and said, I want to be like Elaine Page, everyone was laughing at you. No one is laughing now. That was stunning. An incredible performance. Amazing. I'm reeling from shock about you two, but
I am so thrilled because I know that everybody was against you. I honestly think that we were all being very cynical, and I think that's the biggest wake-up call ever. And I just want to say that it was a complete privilege listening to that. It was inspirational.
I knew the minute you walked out.
Okay, we can cut that off. And we can do the lights again, if you will. I think everyone was stunned because people had preconceived ideas about an individual. And what are some of your thoughts yourself about that? Anything strike you with that whole scenario? Yes. So if, yes. Yeah. Yeah, the music moved the people in spite of any outward appearance. Bill, yeah, is that a...
Well, the thing that impressed me, because I was thinking along the same, you know, how we as human beings, human nature, we do go ahead and we judge people by their outward appearance. And we start everything we've already sum up. And it was just really nice to see a situation like that of someone, okay, you, and not knowing before you think, is this some type of joke? You know, what is she doing at 47 years old? And her background is over. To go ahead and see what the audience and the judges were thinking beforehand, and we opened up the eyes for the all this and that. And then when she started, how quickly she turned over the people around. And
yeah, I think that was striking to everyone. I mean, and the lady there said, this is a wake-up call. Okay. And I think it should be to us to see something like that to, I think, help us to personally reflect on ourselves and how we make certain judgments of people and will give more credence to one person than another because of their appearance. Now, if you've seen Les Miserables, where that was from, and you'd close your eyes and hear her singing, you would imagine this, you know, attractive, you know, person in this love situation or whatever. But too often we end up respecting people because of what we see or the outward appearance instead of just for the fact that they are a person, a human being, and an individual. One endangered character quality in society today is respect. I don't want to talk about that today. I had the sermon ready to go, and then I happened to watch that video, and it just seemed to tie directly in with some of the thoughts that I have today. There have been even articles in well-known magazines in recent years. Wall Street Journal had one entitled, Whatever Happened to Common Courtesy? You know, I think you could see, if you were that person standing up there and saw some of the expressions, that they did not seem to be too courteous to her. Another magazine had an article entitled, Whatever Happened to Good Service? Another, The Decline of Civility. USA Today had one called, Why People Are Rude and How It Harms Society. This society is becoming jaded in many ways, and I think respect is at an all-time low. and kind of for a lot of reasons, how well do you respect the banking industry with what they have perpetuated on people in their lives and had them buy into? There's a lot of reasons why we might not want to respect. Now, very few respect governments, educational institutions, big business, law enforcement, religious authorities, and frankly, a lot of them have brought it on themselves. I mean, you look at religion today and a lot of the scandals that have taken place in religion, and we just had one this last week or two in Phoenix, a church pastor who counseled abused the young ladies during the counseling, which is just so atrocious that it causes you to not respect an institution or an office or whatever due to those things. The civil disobedience from the 60s and 70s certainly began a great decline in that in the nation. A lot of people paid lip service to it. Malcolm X, you remember that name, for those of you that are at least a little bit older, or historians as if you're younger. He spoke in 1965, and he said, and he caused great uprisings, and he was a civil disobedient person, and he said, be peaceful, be courteous, obey the law, respect everyone, but if someone puts his hand on you, send him to the cemetery. Okay. So he gave lip service to respect and kindness and all those things, but somebody puts a hand on you, send them to the cemetery, you get them back. Our favorite humor today is sarcasm. It's unfortunately one that I've enjoyed. It's put-down humor. You get Letterman at night, you get Leno, and a lot of it is put-downs of particularly authority. They like to pick on the vice president or the president or the running mates of whoever, and but their favorite targets, people in authority and leadership positions. What does God have to say about respect, and how should we be? How would God have us to treat one another? How would God have us to treat all people? Let's just talk about that today and maybe enhance our personal goal of being respectful to one another and behaving like Christ did and would have us to. Leviticus chapter 19, it's kind of interesting to see some context sometimes, and I think it shows how much importance God places on respect. Respect for parents is big. It's one of the basic Ten Commandments. I mean, you got 10 things that you give people to do that are the basis for life. And one of those 10 things is to honor your father and your mother. Leviticus 19 and verse 3 says, each of you must respect his mother and father. Hard to do sometimes when respect isn't earned. You know, when parents do things that are evil to their kids even, or maybe they're complete wastrels and maybe the father leaves the home or whatever and abandons the kids. A little hard to respect somebody that does that, but it said respect your father and your mother. Now notice in the same breath, it says, and you must observe my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God. I think he shows what emphasis he places on this concept of respecting your parents. He says, and we keep the Sabbath. We say, we're God's people because we keep the Sabbath. Well, that's true. That's one of the reasons, because we're obeying God in that. Are we God's people because we respect? Would we put that into there too and say, well, that identifies me as one of God's called out ones because I respect other human beings? Well, he puts respect for father and mother in the same breath as keeping my Sabbaths. In other words, respecting me, honoring me as it's his special day. chapter 19, verse 32. It says, "Rise in the presence of the aged. Show respect for the elderly and revere your God. I am the Lord." Same breath, he says, when there's an older person, show respect because they're older than you are. They've got the age, they've been around. It's just common courtesy to give them respect. It's something I demand. I expect of you to even stand up when an older person comes into the room. It doesn't mean you have to do that every single time under every single circumstance, but it shows a frame of mind to where you're thinking of, well, that person has been around a while. They deserve the respect because they're older and established, and I'm younger. And he puts in the same breath, and revere your God. Where is he putting himself with that? Well, he's saying, you respect me, you revere me, you honor me. But he said, I care for older people, and I care for the respect you would give to them. I want you to respect your parents. I want you to respect the elderly. I want you to respect me. In other words, he's saying, human beings are important to me. They're should be just as valuable to you as I am. Because I am, I'm the reason, you are the reason I made mankind, and I respect you, and you're going to be like me, and I expect you to respect other people like you respect me. Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. Now, we certainly can give entire sermons on many of these concepts we're talking about today, but where it's speaking of the marital relationship. So it says, if you have parents, honor your parents. It doesn't give an age limit. You know, if you're 30, you don't have to respect your 70-year-old father. No, it doesn't say that. And it's not just for kids. You know, the old commercial says tricks are for kids. Well, the Ten Commandments aren't just for kids. So we have to have this concept of honoring our parents in their old age, sometimes taking care of them, and sometimes you end up doing that anymore. Well, I have to see that they get a place to go if I can't take care of them, or if they can come and stay with us if there's room and it all works out. But now when you're married, Ephesians 5 and verse 33, it says, "However, each one of you must also love his wife as he loves himself." And so we all want to take care of ourselves. And this kind of is, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You love her as you love yourself. And the wife must respect her husband. Now, do all these people always, are they worthy of respect? Not always. Parents are not always worthy of respect by their actions. Older people can be pretty hard to live with sometimes. Spouses can be difficult to live with sometimes. They don't always deserve that respect, but there is to be in the mind, I need to respect them as a human being. Even though I don't agree with everything they do, with everything they think, with every concept they have. Romans chapter 13. See, God gets pretty specific about how he expects us to respect one another, who he expects us to respect. Romans 13, verse 1, "Everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God established." And authorities that exist have been established by God. We respect the elderly and revere me. He says, I'm connected with this whole thing. I set it up so you'd respect the elderly. I set it up so you'd respect your parents, so you'd respect your mates. So you'd even respect the governments that are out there. Verse 6, this is why you pay taxes, for the authorities are God's servants who give their full time to governing. So when God sets it up and he allows them to be there, respecting them is respecting God. Respecting another person is respecting God. Verse 7, give everyone what you owe him. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. Good time of year to review that, I guess. If revenue, then revenue. If respect, then respect. If honor, then honor. So he would have us to respect the leaders in our society. Are they corrupt? Are they always right? They always do the right thing? No, they don't, but they're still the leaders. And we need to be careful how we address them or refer to them, and to be derogatory and to make them the butt of jokes and that type of thing, I don't think is what God's got in mind. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians 5. Now, obviously, the most ideal thing is for all of these individuals that we are to respect deserve the respect. And do things there where we would want to respect them. And we certainly respect them in different ways, on different levels, depending on how true they are to God and what they're to be doing. But still, all these people deserve respect. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 12 says, "Now we ask you, brothers, to respect those who work hard among you, who are over you in the Lord and who admonish you." And he's speaking of the ministry in the church. They're doing the job, and it says, respect those who are doing the work. Verse 13, hold them in the highest regard because of their work. And again, the ministry has not always done things that is honorable. And you find somebody that does something like that pastor of that one church I told you about, that's just totally despicable. But that we shouldn't let that jade us toward proper respect to those that should receive the respect, and those that are truly God's servants. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 17. 1 Peter 2, verse 17. Now, if we happen to have missed anything, God gives us a kind of receptacle for everything here. 1 Peter 2:17, it says, show proper respect to everyone. And it says, love the brotherhood of believers. Fear God, honor the king. I think it's interesting here how it's sandwiched. He says, respect everyone. The brotherhood of believers, the members of the church, and it says, fear God and honor the king. That's quite a variety there, isn't it? There's everybody, and he puts you in between, you know, right with, he puts himself right between you and the king. In other words, this concept is, again, like early on, it says, honor your father and your mother and revere God. He says it's important to see people as potential gods. Albert Einstein said, let every man be respected as an individual and no man idolized. Good comment. Let every man be respected as an individual and no man idolized. Now, why should I respect everybody? I mean, you look at people and their lifestyles and things they're doing. You know, the programs that they promote, the lack of morality or whatever else, the decisions they make, their behavior, their beliefs. So why should we respect everyone as a human being? Psalm chapter 8. Psalm chapter 8. And verse 4, it's a good question here. When he's thinking about people, and especially when you look and you see the shortcomings that we as people have. And then it says in Psalm chapter 8, verse 4, it says, "What is man that you're mindful of him?" Why would you want to give us the time of day? Why would you want to bother with any of us? And the Son of Man that you visit him, you know, that you care, that you're dealing with us. Verse 4 or 5, "For you have made him a little lower than the angels and have crowned him with glory and honor. You've made him to have dominion over the works of your hands and have put all things under his feet. O Lord, how excellent is your name in all the earth." You know, by extension, God created everyone, and man's got talent. This is Britain's Got Talent. And you looked at this individual, that Susan Boyle, we saw a little bit ago, and he said, "No way, that lady can have talent, because she doesn't look like she's got talent." But what was inside of her, what her potential was, what she can become, became evident when she was able to shine. And I think that's the way it is with mankind. As we look and what we see is something on the outside that is not very pretty, that's not very desirable, and we think there's no way that that person could have talent. How could God use that individual? Well, God looks and he sees what's possible. He sees what's underneath. He's able to use that person's experiences to do something in the world tomorrow. And maybe in this life, that person won't amount to anything. You know, she's, what'd she say? She was 45 or 47, something like that. 47 years, she, in a sense, as we would say it, didn't amount to anything. And now, she's a star. That is, as I understand, the most watched video on, out right now, out there on YouTube or whatever. Everybody sees that she's shining. And whether ourselves or whether other people, they're living their lives out on earth and may never amount to anything in a sense in this life, but God's got something in mind for them to help them to shine. And if God sees what their talent is, and we don't respect them for what they can be and what God can make out of them, how are we going to feel then? I mean, what if, and let's say that, you know, we're changed to spirit being when Jesus Christ comes back, and there will probably be people now there who will be the Susan Boyles that we looked at and said, "Oh, I don't even think that person's going to be in the kingdom. I mean, I don't know why God called them." I mean, they're in the church, and boy, they're just, I can't believe that they're even sitting here. They should be embarrassed to be a part of the church. I mean, in our minds, we may tend to think that about people because on the outside, they may not appear to be living up to our standards or our expectations. And when Christ returns, he is the one that gives honor and glory, and he's the one that can use people. And some of us may be surprised. Who's got talent when we didn't think they would? Or as we're changed to spirit being, that great resurrection comes, and who is going to shine at that time? And who is going to have the type of talent that will cause them to be able to be a son of God forever? And we may be embarrassed, much like that panel was, and a lot of the audience was, with Susan Boyle. You know, a lot of people, can you imagine this girl that we saw at the beginning? You know, she's sitting out there and she goes, "This girl's going to do anything." And that we had millions of people see her do that. And then, that, of course, the panel, too, the two guys, especially the one, you know, he said, "You know, just, what's she doing here?" You know, and he said, I saw an interview with him after at one of the morning shows. He says, "Yeah, she shot me down. You know, I was embarrassed. I just, we really blew her off. We were wrong." And he's even pro now. Well, chances are we're going to be in the same category as people who we see do worthless things, may not be end up being worthless in God's eyes at all. People are of value to God, and he wants us to show respect for individuals for what they can be, even if they're not now. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 22. Matthew 5 and verse 22. The New American Standard Version says, "But I say to you, whoever says to his brother, 'You good for nothing,' shall be guilty before the Supreme Court." So if we look at someone and say, "You are good for nothing," we don't show respect to them as an individual. Or because of something they've done that we would say they are totally worthless. Well, what they did can be wrong, and we should be able to judge when people do wrong. Doesn't mean you just accept everything people do and say, "Oh, that's okay because they're the Son of God." No, you say, "That's wrong that they do that. But I can't make that judgment on them to condemn them at this point." So if you say "you good for nothing," you'll be guilty of the Supreme Court. And whoever says "you fool" will be guilty enough to go into fiery hell. I mean, that's a very strong statement. You know, when you in your mind... And people felt, "Well, this lady's a fool for standing up there. I mean, she's just going to embarrass herself." If we say that about people, and we may be embarrassing ourselves. And it said that if you really hold that tightly, to where you're just saying that person's a total good for nothing, a fool, they'll never amount to anything, we're not respecting their potential as a God-created human being, it says we may not be able to be in the kingdom because we'll be dealing with people that maybe we felt were worthless. And when they're resurrected or whatever, and we're supposed to be dealing with them, we're supposed to show respect to them and say, "You have potential to also be a child of God." Joseph Joubert, not even sure who he is, but I found this good quote. It says, "Kindness consists in loving people more than they deserve." I want to be loved more than I deserve. I expect you may too. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 18. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 18. Now, this shows that, you know, respect is not simply based upon what people do or how they treat you. And it's a difficult thing. I mean, how can God respect us for what we've done to his Son? Now, when we sin, we put stripes on the body of Christ. We shed his blood. You know, what if he went around saying, "You killed my Son. I'm still mad at you." It wouldn't fly. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 18, it says, "Slaves," and you might in this day and age, since we don't literally have slaves, although with your employer you may think so, but employees, you might say, "Slaves, submit yourselves to your masters with all respect." This person's over you. And say, "Yeah, but they're not a very good boss. I mean, they don't treat us well. They spend all the money, and they don't give raises and bonuses." But it says, "Not only to those who are good and considerate, but also to those who are harsh." Say, "Hey, the boss is the boss. You know, he pays the paycheck. Or he owns you, if that were the case, if you're a slave. And whether he's a nice guy or whether he's a mean guy, we're still to have respect for the fact that they are over me, and they're a human being." Difficult to do. It's not easy to have respect for people that don't deserve it as far as their actions or how we would perceive them to be. I may not think much of someone, but God does. I mean, Jesus Christ felt that that person, whoever they are, was worth dying for, because he died for the whole world. 1 Timothy chapter 2. 1 Timothy chapter 2. You know, in a spiritual sense, we may think that only pretty people can sing. You know, only people that we're attracted to are worth having respect for, you know, on a spiritual level. 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 4. I'm sorry, let's look at verse 1. 1 Timothy 2:1, he says, I urge then, first of all, that requests and prayers and intercessions and thanksgiving be made for everyone. I don't want to pray for somebody I don't like. I don't want to pray for somebody that doesn't deserve it. He says, for kings and all those in authority, that we may live peaceful and quiet lives in all goodliness and holiness. This is good, and it pleases God our Savior. It says for you to pray for everybody, to have respect for people in positions of authority, whether it be our parents or our governing officials or the ministry or whatever, our husband or wife. It says this is good and pleases God our Savior, who wants all men to be saved and come to a knowledge of the truth. Now what if you don't like somebody and you don't think they deserve your respect, but God does like them and figures that he's going to give them a calling, if not in this life, in the next? Are we playing God if we do that? We need to try to approach every person we meet with the understanding that eventually they'll probably end up being a part of the family of God. Maybe not today, maybe not in the millennium, maybe it's going to be in the great white throne judgment that person eventually ends up being a part of the family of God. And once again, you know, when all is said and done, and when the new heaven and new earth comes down, and all these things are done, and all people are done, and the ones that didn't make it are burned in the lake of fire, and you come across somebody who you treated poorly in this life, and they also are a son of God, and then may be your boss, who knows? That's God's job. Are we going to be embarrassed like that panel was embarrassed on how they treated that poor lady? Totally misjudged you. We're really sorry. This is embarrassing, you know, they said. This is a wake-up call. You know, we don't want our wake-up call to be so late that we don't make it into the kingdom because of our attitude, and they do. That's what it says, and if you call somebody a fool, you might be in danger of the hellfire. We won't turn there, but 1 John 4, verse 19, it says, we love him because he first loved us. You know, we're always not so likable either. And what if it were based upon just how good we are and how likable we are all the time? Whether God decided to apply the sacrifice of Jesus Christ to us. I really wouldn't want it to be that way. You know, where he's saying, I don't know, I don't like you very much today. I don't think I'll forgive your sin. Not going to apply the sacrifice to you. This is, he first loved us, and then we loved him. And that's the way we need to do with others. We need to first love them, even if they don't love us. Even as the employer who is harsh and not kind and considerate. We still need to love them. Speaking of love, 1 Corinthians 13, it says, love is kind, and love is not rude. A number one test of my faith is relationships. You know, how am I willing to get along with others? It's not what I say, but how my belief comes out in behavior. And God sees what's in the heart and mind. How do we really treat each other? If I were to say, what really irritates you about people? I mean, you go through a day, and you say, as I go through a day, and when that happens, that really irritates me. That really sets me off. I mean, my guess is a lot of things that irritate you. There's a lot of things that irritate me. Oh, and we have to think about, am I being the irritator? Oh, it's people that slurp their soup. That can be very irritating. You know, why don't you just do something different than slurp it? Why don't you wait till it's cooler or something? People who honk their horn in a traffic jam when nothing's going anywhere. You know, just irritating things like that. What do we do? You know, the person that plays their music as loud as they can next door when they have the party. You know, you just boom, 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 boom. Goes into the night. Some of you people that live out in the wilderness probably don't get that much. There are not a lot of like smoking restaurants anymore, but remember in the booth particularly, maybe there are. Are they only non-smoking here now? That's good. What used to really get to me is when they'd light their cigarette and then they'd hold it over towards my booth. You know, if you want it, you do it. You know, don't put it over to me. I get that outside. You can still smoke outside in Arizona in some of those places. And sometimes you like to go out and it's really nice out. And then this person comes and sits down. You know, children that are doing things that are irritating to people around them. And the parent just kind of is oblivious. You know, not even trying to do something different. People that have a basket full of goods in the line that says 10 items or less. You know, I mean, the things that irritate me. People who talk during a presentation or a speech or a concert. We went to a Jackson Browne concert several years ago, and the lady behind us was talking. There was about three people. They were talking during this, and you're trying to hear Jackson's words, you know, and it's kind of, some of them are good. But I finally said, I'm sorry, but I came here to hear Jackson Browne, not you. Please be quiet. People who sleep during church, if you're up here. There are all kinds of irritating things, but the point is, how do we think about what we do? And whether it's irritating somebody else, it's not just trying to do, you know, everything just to please, and you become the pleaser in the wrong way. But think about how we come across and whether we're being rude or not. Let's just talk about some practical ways to show respect for others. One way is when you speak, be tactful, not just truthful. Now, we can be truthful, and the truth hurts, and sometimes we have a certain amount of pride in being truthful. A primary way we can show respect to people is with our words. Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 4. Proverbs 15 and verse 4. And you know, when we guide our tongue and we've given whole sermons about the tongue and you know, where it says the tongue is an unruly evil that sets afire the course of nature and all this type of thing. And it says, try to guide your tongue. And it's if you can guard your tongue, you're a perfect man or a woman. And well, in fact, it doesn't say perfect woman, does it? Maybe that's because it's just unattainable. I don't know. But no, I didn't mean that. Men are just as bad. But it does say that. It says if a person can guide their tongue, the same as a perfect man. And I guess he just say, get out of it what we can. As I go on that, guarding my tongue. All right. Proverbs 15, verse 4. It says, the tongue that brings healing is a tree of life, but a deceitful tongue crushes the spirit. You know, when you just say too much or you say it in the wrong way, It's basically called being tactful. It's the way we say something. And, you know, even how you say something is important. You say, I didn't say anything wrong. How did you say it? You can say, hello. Or you can say, hello. Or you can say, hello. It's one word, but there are three different intonations to it and would be taken three different ways. You know, you're being sincere and you can tell you're happy to see me. Casual and hello, or sarcastic. Someone called tactfulness as the emotional lubricant of life that reduces friction. Being tactful is good. Learning how to be truthful and tactful at the same time is difficult, but it's, if you're going to respect people, it's essential. Somebody else said, people with tact have less to retract. Okay. You ever had to retract anything you've said? Like I said about women a minute ago. I didn't really mean that. I was just not watching my tongue. Apologize for that. Tact is what you think but don't say. You know, when she asks if this dress makes her look fat. What is your response? If you're wise, you won't say anything at all. You just, I asked you a question. Oh, well, listen, I gotta go do something. That's probably not very tactful either. Tact is the ability to make a point without making an enemy. You know, sometimes things need to be said, but how do you say it? You know, do you think about how you say it and how it will come across, and will this offend them more, or put them on the defensive, or it will really be helpful? Tact is when someone tells you to go jump off a cliff and in a way you look forward to making the journey. Oh, great, you know, well, no problem. Tact is the art of telling someone he's open-minded when actually he just has a hole in his head. Tact is changing the subject without changing your mind. You know, you get into arguments with people and there's a standoff on it, and you could do whatever to make your point, or you can change the subject because you know it's not going to go anywhere. Oliver Wendell Holmes said, don't flatter yourself that friendship authorizes you to say disagreeable things to your intimates. Well, we're best friends, so I can tell them. Now, you know, Proverbs also talks about, you know, words of a friend that, you know, hurt for a little bit. And there are times when you have to say something that is going to help a person or they're doing wrong, but how do you say it? Holmes goes on to say, the nearer you come into a relationship with a person, the more necessary do tact and courtesy become. And we tend to do it the other way. Oh, I live with them all the time, so I can say anything I want. Well, it says, respect your mates. And that's oftentimes one where you have, say, the worst things. He says, except in cases of necessity, which are rare, leave your friend to learn unpleasant things from his enemies. They are ready enough to tell them. Ephesians 4 says to speak the truth in love. Because it doesn't mean you lie. It doesn't mean you fabricate or necessarily withhold information. But you speak the truth, and when you do it in love. A lot of people today think they're being frank when they're simply being rude. Do you ever hear the person that says, well, I just tell it like it is and let the chips fall where they may? You know, there's a kind of pride in that. So, I don't have to mince my words, you know. I just say what's on my mind. Is it always good to say what's on your mind? Is it helpful to that person? Or is it more about your vanity of, I always say something about what's on my mind? Basically, you're saying, I don't care about your feelings. I don't care if this hurts you or not. I just care about what I want to say, and I'm going to say it. the man who came up to the minister after the sermon on the parable of the talents. The guy came up to the minister and said, "Well, my talent is just to speak my mind." The pastor said, "That's one talent you might want to bury." Should ask ourselves, why am I going to say this? Is it to help them or destroy them? Is it to make me look smarter or better? Or is it to punish them? Is it to tear them down or to build them up? And again, we're thinking about the other individual and we're respecting them and their feelings. Another thing we can do with regard to respect is when I'm served, to be understanding, not demanding. I was talking with a couple this last week in another area, and she says, "I just get embarrassed when we go into a restaurant because he'll just say, 'Hey, I need some ketchup,' to the waitress. And it's just a demanding thing. It's like, you know, I'm the guy that you're supposed to serve, and so you got to serve me." And it's an attitude. I think one of the greatest tests of our character is how they treat people when they serve us. You know, if it's a waitress, an assistant, a clerk, a husband or wife, or children, when someone does something for us, are we understanding or demanding? How we relate to a person who waits on us will reveal whether there's a character flaw in us. You know, do you really respect a waitress? We should. We should treat them with kindness. They're human beings. They're doing a job for you. They're making a living. You know, when it says, "Do unto others as you would have them do to you." Rudeness is a weak man's imitation of strength. Well, I'm the dad. You know, some dads treat their children that way. We're also to respect and love our children. He goes, "Well, you have to do what I say." And it's more of a commanding rather than let's work together. You know, how does Jesus Christ treat us? Rudeness can kill a family and a marriage. The couple I was talking to this week, it was killing that relationship. And the kids, you know, he demanded, you clean that up. You get it cleaned up now. You'd stand there until they got it cleaned up. You know, I wasn't looking for some way to work with that child to help them understand why they need to do it or that they need to do it. You know, I used one of my favorite lines is when you're working, how is it that you want to be treated? You know, there's a boss, because you're the boss and because you pay the wage, you can say, "Go get that piece of lumber and bring it over here." And the guy's got to get the piece of lumber and bring it over. But how do you feel when somebody tells you to do something? I'm still carnal, and I still have that same reaction, whether it's whoever it is that's telling me to do something. My reaction is, no, or I'll do it later, or I'll do it when I want, or I'll show you that I don't have to do what you say. I mean, that's the normal carnal reaction, whether you're a child or whether you're an adult, whatever situation you're in. But the same boss, the same circumstance, when he says, "Hey, would you mind bringing that board over here?" "No, I wouldn't mind at all." You know, when you're over there and you can bring the board, yeah, we're working together. I'm bringing the board here. And just how you say it, this makes a whole big difference in the mind and showing you respect that individual. Do you have to say, "Would you mind bringing it over?" What if the guy said, "Yeah, I mind. I don't want to do it." And you have to say, "Well, go do it anyway. It's your job." But you don't need to, for the most part. And just dealing with our family and dealing with people around us, being kind. Someone said, "Constant digs will soon bury a home." Oftentimes we're the most disrespectful to the people that are closest to us. And I don't think that's what God's got in mind. Be tactful, not just truthful. Okay, another point, when you disagree, learn how to respond respectfully. We disagree with a lot of things. You know, I disagree with many of the philosophies of the Democratic Party, let's say, and I'm not trying to get on, make this political, but, you know, with abortion. I disagree with abortion should be on demand or whatever. I disagree that same-sex marriages should be legalized. I disagree with a lot of different things, but how do I respond when I disagree with a neighbor, with a work associate, with maybe another member in the church, and still respect them? If they have a lifestyle, an attitude, a behavior that I don't agree with, how do I handle that, and how am I supposed to relate? I think if we remember two things that can help. First is that every individual, with their attitude, with their actions, with their beliefs, are accountable to God. Every individual, for their actions, their attitudes, their beliefs, are accountable to God. So that's number one. Number two is that you're not God. If we can remember those two basic things, I think it can help us with our relationships, that am I playing God? You know, even with our children, we're responsible up to a point with our children, but when they're the age that they are responsible to God, then we must let God handle it. You know, we like to try to control things, and particularly our kids, because our kids, we love them, and we know that if they do what we want, they're going to be much better off. If they do what God wants, they'll be better off yet. And then they start doing things that isn't what God wants, and it's not what we want. It becomes very difficult to handle those situations, but God will handle that. And sometimes we just have to back off and not be so disagreeable. You know, particularly when they're out of the home, you don't say, you will do this. Well, if they choose to before God, they will. Romans chapter 14. Romans chapter 14. It would be very easy for us to be disagreeable. I don't know how many times I've seen, and maybe particularly in the church, but just in general, you find a parent when their child, you know, they get out of the home and they say, you're not my child anymore because you're not doing what I want. You know, I disown you. I don't have a child, you know. Is that what God would have us to do? Romans chapter 14, verse 12 says, so then each one shall give account of himself to God. Verse 13, therefore let's not judge one another anymore, but determine this, not to put an obstacle or a stumbling block in a brother's way. Not just a brother, but others too. Are we putting a stumbling block in the way that, you know, causes them to react a different way? As I say, even in something as simple as when we're dealing with somebody and say, you go pick that up, I said, would you mind picking that up? I mean, the you go pick that up can be a stumbling, something that gets in the way of a person wanting to react. And it just is saying, be careful how we say things, how we discuss things. You know, one of the phrases that Joe DeCotch Sr. used to use, which is, it's a good one, no matter what, but he says, learn to disagree without being disagreeable. I don't think he made that up. I don't know who coined that phrase, but it's good. I mean, we can disagree, but learn to disagree without being disagreeable. When you share or discuss beliefs and opinions, we need to respect people, not just reject them. 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. We have a men's club in Phoenix. And this club is set up where we have a section called Prepare to Give an Answer, or be ready to give an answer. And what they do is a couple of the guys will stand up and they'll talk about one of our doctrines, and then the audience asks questions and kind of challenges the presentation, giving an opposite point of view that what you know we believe and so forth. And it's to be done in a friendly manner, but in doing so, some of the guys will, they're giving an answer and somebody will ask them a question and say, well, that's just a dumb question. We should focus on the entire verse. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15. It says, be always prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you, to give the reason for the hope that you have. Now, for one thing, it's saying for people that ask you, it doesn't mean you go about preaching and telling them they're wrong and they're all wet and they're going to be in the lake of fire because they don't keep the Sabbath and all this type of thing. But someone says, well, why do you go to church on Saturday? Then be prepared to give an answer to the hope that lies within you. But notice what the rest of this verse says in the New International Version. It says, but do this with gentleness and respect. You know, this is a person that may not agree at all with what you're saying, but is just, maybe they're wanting to be argumentative, but still they want you to give an answer to the hope that lies within you. But as you do it with gentleness and respect. And to say to someone, well, that's a stupid question, is not gentleness or respect. It's basically because you don't really know the answer. It's generally the way that it is if we try to deflect it off and say, well, you know, you should know better than that or whatever. But do it with gentleness and respect. When there are people that don't see things the way we do, do we respect the fact that they've got an opinion? When I get into a conversation with people that maybe they're avid Sunday keepers or whatever, and I've been in them, and I express why I keep the Sabbath, and I'll just say, I really am glad we live in a country where we're all allowed to believe what we want, and we are, and I am. And that doesn't put them on the defensive and just say, well, you're wrong and I'm right, but it says, hey, we live in a country where we can believe that. And, you know, I personally believe that they will be called and given a chance to know it sometime. I don't have to just tell them that. Colossians 4 and verse 6. Colossians 4 and verse 6. I think these verses are telling us that we don't have to be confrontational. We just talk in a way that respects that individual, even if we disagree with them. It says, let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man. And one thing it's saying here is that you have to kind of judge that person and how it is you're going to say it and why you're saying it and how they will respond. You know, it's not up to us just to say whatever's on our mind. But it says, know how you ought to answer every individual with what they want or what they need or what they're really looking for. If someone's really looking for the truth, you give them a whole lot more in a more direct manner than the person who's wanting to challenge that truth. 2 Timothy 2, verse 25. Now, what about people that are just doing the wrong things, or thinking the wrong things, or saying the wrong things? Is it time to just blast them? Well, there is a time for everything. But in general, 2 Timothy 2 and verse 25, it says, in meekness, instructing those that oppose themselves. So they're thinking wrong. The way they're thinking is going to harm them. But it says, do it in meekness, if God peradventure will give them repentance to the acknowledging of the truth. And there again, you're thinking of how you're going to say it. You're respecting that individual for where they are in that calling. Maybe it's time for them to be called, maybe it's not. We need to let our light shine, but not to be a blowtorch. Okay, what happens when people are rude to us? Now, we need to be nice to other people. We need to be respectful for other people. But everybody is not nice to us, right? How do we respond? Romans chapter 12 and verse 17. You know, the way of human nature is to pay back kind for kind. Romans 12 and verse 17, the New American Standard Version says, never pay back evil for evil to anyone. You know, they said that to me, so I'm going to be just as hurtful to them, and I can be. They're going to bring up this, so I'm going to bring up that about what they did. You know, how many marital arguments are that way where, yeah, well, you did this. Yeah, I know, but you did that. You know, and what you did was obviously worse than what I did. And we like to bring those things up to try to put it. But never pay back evil for evil to anyone. And it goes on to say, respect what is right in the sight of all men. You know, again, be respectful of people. Verse 21, do not overcome evil, or do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. If people aren't respectful to us, don't act back in kind. Very difficult. That's trying to be Christ-like, because we've just been through Passover, and we know how we are supposed to be. People aren't always easy to love and respect, but neither are we. I'm not always easy to love. My wife could tell you stories. Some of you could tell stories, I suppose. But we do need to respect all. Respect for authority begins in the family. And it's so important for families to instill that in their children and to help them to see honoring your father and mother, as the Bible says, that you may have a long, good life. You know, it has life-lasting results. If you teach proper respect for people, for your children, for you, or your children for others when they're young, they're going to be a lot better off in the future. If a child doesn't learn respect and authority in the home, what's going to happen when they're 16, 18, 25? You know, they don't want anybody to tell them what to do. They won't be successful in a career, relationships, marriage. That's why it's so important to teach respect for others. And one way we teach it is by giving it. You know, my 5-year-old grandson, he's just very respectful young boy. And he'll say thank you, and he'll say please, and he'll try to do things, and he doesn't like to see, you know, anybody hurt. And the reason he does that is because his mom is that way. And she'll be respectful to him. She'll say, you know, Kyle, would you please do this? Well, he's a little boy. Why do you have to say please to a little boy? Teach them how to deal with people. And he does it in kind. And she'll say thank you when he does something. And it's not just that she says, you need to learn to say thank you. And it wasn't that demanding, you have to do this, but it's setting the example. And you show your children how to do it, and then they will end up being able to do it. So respect is important, and I hope, you know, thinking about that Susan Boyle with people lacking respect for her because they misjudged, they looked at something and didn't see the big picture, that we too can miss the big picture sometime, but we do, as God says, need to show respect for everyone.